This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The monarch butterfly has been studied universally, from its captivating metamorphosis to its amazing migration over thousands of miles. But within just the past decade, there's been a staggering 97% decrease in the butterfly's population. Now there are efforts underway to have the monarch declared a threatened species, as well as efforts to boost its habitat. And joining me to discuss the plight of the monarch and what you can do to help are Bill Hopple, Executive Director of the Cincinnati Nature Center, and Bill Creasy, Chief Naturalist and Adult Program Manager with the center. And thanks to both of you for being here this afternoon.
Glad to be here.
And you can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. We'll start with Bill Hopple.
Okay.
What exactly are the factors that are causing this huge decline in the monarch's population?
Habitat reduction. Basically, human impact. Over the last 20 years, we've seen a reduction of over 90% in the population in North America, and most of it's caused by human activities.
How real is the threat, Bill, that the monarch could become extinct?
Oh, very real. To the extent that there's been a nomination to the Department of the Interior to name it on the endangered species list. And Bill can give you some more details about that if...
Yeah. Bill, what's the status of that? That was the several environmental groups filed with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service asking for the monarch butterfly to be cleared a threatened species. What's happened with that so far?
I don't know where it stands at this point. I know the important thing is to get it listed as a threatened species. The things we take for granted sometimes disappear. And we're looking at 100 years ago and what happened with the pasture pigeon. It filled the skies, clouds of birds, and yet the last one died at the Cincinnati Zoo just 100 years ago. And so we don't want that to be our legacy. So we can do things right now to protect this butterfly and try and ensure its future survival.
And so you see a similar pattern to the carrier pigeon that concerns you then?
Well, we don't want to make any assumptions, but yeah, we can do things. And also, the carrier pigeon is, the pasture pigeon, excuse me, is long gone. But this is something we can do right now. We can't do something to save the whales in our backyard, but we can plant milkweed seeds in our own backyard. And that's something you can do to help foster these future generations of monarch butterflies.
If we can get the monarch butterfly designated as threatened, how will that help the situation?
Well, it would give a lot of authority to creating habitat. But again, we don't have to wait for that. That will be a long process. It's by no means a slam dunk. But the exciting part of the monarch situation is that, as Bill said, we can make a difference right now. Mm-hmm. We've been distributing milkweed seeds throughout greater Cincinnati, and the response has been just overwhelming. Mm-hmm. We've, to date, distributed over 40,000 seed packets. And if our listeners want to do the same, they can go on the Nature Center website, cincynature.org, and click on the Milkweed to Monarchs, enter their name, and we'll send them packets of milkweed seeds. It's not too late this time of year yet. Bill can talk a little bit about the plant itself and maybe a little bit about why milkweed is important to the monarch.
What is the relationship between milkweed and monarch butterflies?
Well, the eggs are laid on the milkweed plant. That's the only plant the adult female can lay the eggs on. And they don't lay thousands of eggs on one plant. They lay individual single eggs on each milkweed plant. So you need a lot of plants, obviously, so all those eggs can be laid. Then when they hatch, this is a toxic plant to many organisms, but the caterpillars are adapted to survive that, and in fact those toxins transfer into their own body and make them unpalatable to predators. So it's kind of a guarantee that this thing, once you get the egg started, you get the milkweeds growing, the egg starred, the caterpillars, and the whole life cycle then takes place in link to that. Now the adults feed on a variety of plants, but the adults can use the nectar of the flowers, but they'll also go to a lot of other flowers to get their food resource.
So there's a distinction I think needs to be made between host plants, correct?
Right.
And nectar plants.
Right.
What is that?
So the host plant is what the caterpillars feed on, and that's all they can feed on is the milkweed. And the nectar plants, it's a much larger sampling that they can go to.
For the adult butterflies,
yes.
And the monarch actually absorbs some of those toxins from the milkweed. So that's a defensive mechanism for the butterfly?
Right. So it goes all the way through. The caterpillar is unpalatable as well as the adult. So all the way through the life cycle, those toxins are transferred from one stage to the next.
So birds, which are one of the primary predators of butterflies, learn after just one taste, and they spit out the monarch. They learn, don't eat the ones that are orange and black.
Gives you a stomach ache.
Yeah, it does. And as a result, it's been a very, very powerful adaptation and protection.
Bill, monarchs, they really did used to be such a common sight in the summer. And as a naturalist, you keep an eye out on them. How many have you seen lately?
Well, just informally, we run summer camp. So I'm always outside in the summertime. And counting them, last summer of 2013, I only saw a total of 4 adult butterflies all summer long. And if a lot of the listeners and you think back to your childhood, you'd see, 4 in one field at one time. And so their numbers have just dropped so significantly since we were younger. And now this summer, it was good news for me. I saw 11 adult butterflies. So there's a little tick up for
me. A little encouraged by that.
But there's still a lot, like I say, a lot we can do. And as Bill said, getting the seeds from the nature center and planting them in a sunny spot is what you can do to save an animal right now.
I can't even remember the last time I saw a monarch butterfly. But remind me of what they look like. I mean, that's how long it's been since I've seen one.
Yeah, this is a large adult, like Bill said, black and orange, about 3-inch wingspan. Beautiful animals. They're not very fast flyers like you would think a bat or a bird. And so you just see them floating along and feeding on all sorts of summer blossoms, late summer, the ironweed, goldenrods, a variety of field flowers, teasels, thistles, all sorts of things that they feed on. And it's a great time to see them. But also in late August and September, I would notice that they're going south. And as I was driving across 275, if I was driving east-west, I'd see these butterflies floating across the road, winging their way south. And that's it. They don't really pump their wings hard like you think of bird migration. It's more of a floating, gliding, moving south. And they go all the way down to Mexico.
So the monarch butterfly has an amazing life cycle. Tell me about that.
Well, as I said, a single egg is laid on the milkweed plant. Mm-hmm. That hatches after about 3 to 5 days, and then that really tiny caterpillar starts to feed on the milkweed. I learned recently that about a third of those drown when they start to feed on because they're so small, and this latex-like sap comes out of the leaf. If anybody's familiar with milkweed, when you break a leaf off, you see all this white milky material.
Maybe that's where the name came from.
Maybe so.
It's also a misnomer, isn't it? It's not really a weed.
No,
not at all.
They're beautiful flowers. On the seed packet, we show you all 3 species of seeds that are mixed into the batch. So they're in pinks and orange for the butterfly milkweed.
Absolutely beautiful.
But spectacular colors. And then that caterpillar actually sheds its skin. So insects have an exoskeleton. Now on a caterpillar, it's a little bit more flexible than you think of a grasshopper, how that's like a suit of armor. But as they grow, they're going to shed that skin 5 times, and then the large last instar is what pupates. And so it gets attached to a leaf surface or a stick and has a J shape, and then it breaks that skin and it's in the chrysalis. And then from the chrysalis, and again, a week or so, it'll hatch out of the chrysalis, maybe as long as 2 weeks, hatch out of that chrysalis, and the beautiful butterfly will just dangle. The wings have all been enclosed, and they'll pump fluids into the main veins and let the wings dry and set, and then they're ready to fly off. So the whole life cycle takes about a month.
But let's talk about the whole seasonal cycle, because it actually goes through, 4 generations,
right,
over the course of the year. They spend the winter, as Bill said, in Mexico. In spring, as it warms up, the adults head north. They then go through 3 more generations. So the butterflies that come into Cincinnati are really the second, or maybe sometimes the 3rd generation. And after the 3rd generation, that's when the adult migrates south. In some cases, it's coming all the way from Canada. So they may travel as much as 2,500 miles to make it back to winter and avoid the freeze in those trees in Mexico. So only butterfly that we know of that goes through those multi-generations and migrates like that. It's just an incredible biology.
Yeah,
it is. It covers thousands of miles and several generations. So that is very amazing.
And we took the Nature Center runs a travel program. And in 2007, we did take a group down to see the monarchs in the Mexico region. The oyamel fir is the conifer up in the high mountains where these butterflies hang in the thousands and millions. And we had people experiencing that, and there were some people that were just laughing. They said, this is like being in a giant orange snow globe, because it was a sunny day and the butterflies were active. It's like being in a Disney movie. They're everywhere. And we had other people just staying there silently, and one lady had a tear coming down her cheek. She said, all these souls, all these little individuals from all over North America have come down here to spend the winter. So that's the super generation. As Bill said, they go down in August, September. They spend the entire winter. They get down there around November, and it's not till February and March they start getting that urge to move back north.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can also email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And you know, my producer and I might be giving our ages away, but we think back to a time where, when you were growing up in Cincinnati, milkweed was pretty much everywhere.
Right.
Well, what's happened to all those plants?
For a couple of different reasons. Some cases, the fields have been taken out of old field production and put back into agriculture. Agricultural practices today involve the use of herbicides that sometimes can drift off of the intended field. And as a result, the habitat, which the milkweed grows in, the old field habitat, has been significantly reduced. The exciting part is that we can all make a difference. I mean, unlike rainforest restoration, where you need to do it on the order of hundreds of thousands of acres, we can all have an impact literally in our backyard. If we plant enough of the plants, and that's what we can be doing right now this fall, get them planted. Over winter, the seeds will be ready to germinate in the spring.
Right. This isn't something you want to wait and plant in the spring. In fact, if you think of that milkweed pod, it's got that fluffy white material, and they're out there floating around right now. So this is the perfect time of year to call the Nature Center and get those seed packets and just scratch the soil. You know, in the wild, they're not going to be planted, you know, 3 inches deep. So this is something you just want to loosen the soil on the surface, about an eighth of an inch of soil on the top. Get them in right now, and they'll overwinter and then sprout for you in the springtime.
Is there a best spot to plant milkweed? Or
just sunny spot.
Just any sunny spot.
Open sun.
I'd like to give a big thanks also to two of our corporate partners. If you don't have a computer, or if you don't want to go on the website, go into any greater store in Cincinnati. They've got the seed packets, and Jungle Jim's Eastgate also has the packets. So I really want to thank those companies for helping us. They're both really excited about this project.
Has anybody else been involved in helping get the seeds out?
We've got them at some local nurseries as well around town. And so, yeah.
They're stuck in a flower pot. There are little signs sticking out of that, and the seeds are right there. So you have to just go by and pick them up.
Simple as that, simple thing to plant, and one simple act will have a great impact, I take it.
That's right.
And as I said, the response has been really significant. So we're going to be developing, this is a new initiative of Cincinnati Nature Center, one of our conservation programs for our new Center for Conservation and Stewardship. In the spring, we'll have a lot more activities and programs. You'll be hearing a lot more about milkweed to monarchs, this new initiative.
Why is it so important, Bill, to focus on the monarch butterfly?
Monarch butterfly, first of all, it's got an emotional connection, right? I mean, everybody immediately can identify, and when you hear that, oh, yeah, really, I haven't seen them as many for a while. But the important thing is that they represent an entire habitat. All of the pollinators that our crops and other plants are dependent upon live in the same habitat. So if we restore the monarch habitat, we're really restoring habitat for a number of other plant and animal species. So it really is a major conservation effort, and it's happening all over the United States. There are initiatives in many cities, and we realized over this past year that nobody has taken the lead to really promote this in the greater Cincinnati area. So our new Center for Conservation and Stewardship is really working to take that out and be that source. So if after the show's over, if they want to call the Nature Center, or as I say, get on our website, we'll continue the dialogue.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Mary from Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Mary. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just had two little stories I wanted to tell. Back in the 70s, I lived over in Independence, Kentucky, across the river. I had a big backyard. I got up one day and looked outside, and I had a tree right in the center of the yard, big, tall tree, don't remember what kind, but it was orange from top to bottom.
Wow.
The monarchs had all decided to, you know, do a little bed and breakfast in my backyard, I guess. And they stayed there, and I wanted to see them leave, but I didn't get a chance to. But it was just beautiful, totally orange from top to bottom. And the other thing I wanted to say is now I live in a very suburban area, just 6 miles from downtown Cincinnati, and I do have milkweed on my fence on a corner lot, so you can see it's suburbia. But I do have monarchs in the backyard. I have some little scrungy flowers, wildflowers, and they feed on those. But by accident, I was picking basil, and I picked up a big handful and brought it in the house, and I was going to fix it to put it in the freezer. And I picked up one of the branches. I saw a cocoon. So we got with the little gold, those beautiful gold spots that are on the monarch cocoon.
Yeah, that's the one.
So we got on Google and started looking to see what kind it was. And as soon as we put in chrysalis with gold spots, up came the monarch. So I said, now what do I do? Because I pulled the thing out of the ground, you know, the stem. So I hung it on a shade in my study, and I just left it. And we got to see, my granddaughter and I, the whole process going from the green to translucent to the transparent, and then hatching, and then deciding where it wanted to fly. And then I was able to, I read very carefully that you can take them from the outside of the wing, mm-hmm. not the inside.
Pretty amazing,
the top,
huh?
The bottom. I'm sorry?
That's pretty amazing.
It was very amazing. So we got it outside, and I had, you know, flowers on the fence, and I put it there, and I just watched it, and I was going to do a selfie, but the little butterfly said, no, I've done my part. I'm out of here. And
I'm gone.
Flew off. Yeah.
Mary, well, that's just beautiful story. Thank you very much.
But it was what I wanted to emphasize is just the little bit of wild milkweed that I have evidently helped. And yep, I'm
that
going
did the
to
trick. That's right.
Seeds. Yeah.
So get your neighbors to do the same thing.
Thank you, Mary.
Okay.
We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Let's talk to Amanda from Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Amanda. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. My question is actually about the milkweed. I have a pet and spends a lot of time outside, especially when the weather's nice. And you had mentioned that sometimes, or not sometimes, but that the milkweed is toxic. So how safe is it to plant the milkweed in a yard if you have a pet?
Okay, Amanda, thank you for the question.
Yeah, I don't think, well, it depends on the nature of your pet. I mean, does your pet go around and chew up everything that's growing in the yard? If that's consideration, then maybe you want to do it in a pot on the deck or something like that. But generally, most animals stay away from things that are, you know, toxic. They know there's a lot of plants out in nature that have toxins in them, and we seldom hear of any domestic animal that interacts with that type of thing.
Bill, do we know how much an animal would have to ingest? I mean, we say toxic, it's really distasteful is the first thing. Generally, an animal that would ingest it would spit it out because it is so distasteful.
Yeah, I agree.
So probably not an issue with actually.
I don't think you have anything to worry about. Yeah.
Let's talk with Tom from Union Township. Good afternoon, Tom. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I just wanted to point out also that this is a dual-purpose plant. Not only does it provide wonderful food for the monarchs, but once the flowers are gone and the seed pod forms, that young seed pod makes a very good vegetable. It was used by the Indians. I first found out about it by reading a Yul Gibbons book, and it is a very good vegetable. And so you can control how much of your milkweed is goes to seed and propagates, and also have a nice vegetable in the latter part of the summer.
Very interesting. Thanks, Tom.
Wow.
Something I didn't know about.
Yeah,
learn something new every day.
We'll have to have a milkweed dinner.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk with Bernice from Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Bernice. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. I love the conversation. I wonder if your guests have ever heard of this. About 3 years ago, because we have a very late-blooming flower that I call a daisy chrysanthemum, or a daisy aster, however, they smell like chrysanthemums. They're very tall. They're very lovely. They bloom in early October, late September. And one day we went into our yard, and hundreds of monarchs had stopped to visit these flowers, and they stayed for several days. We tried to take pictures, but they were blurs. And when the the flowers were just shredded, just absolutely shredded, and they have never come back again.
That's interesting. What color were the flowers?
The colors are, we have two kinds, deep pink with a bright yellow center, and then sort of a very pale orange.
Interesting. I'm not familiar with these. These don't sound like native wildflowers. I was thinking maybe you had New England aster or something like that.
No, they're not native wildflowers. And I had them in our home, which was probably 46 or 47 years ago. And then when we moved into a condo, I brought them, and I have them here now. But I've never seen them anywhere else in Cincinnati. They're beautiful.
Well, the nectar supply was there in the center of those flowers. So all the little florets in the center provide nectar, and that's what they're feeding on.
If you can get a picture of them, and you can email them to the Nature Center, and we can take a look and try and identify them, but we'd have to actually see the plant.
All right, I will do that, but it'll have to be next year.
Yeah, exactly.
When they come back out.
Exactly.
Now
right.
Gone.
Okay.
Love the conversation. Thank
Bernice,
you.
Thank you so much. Let's talk with Tracy from Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Tracy.
Hello. I just wanted to thank you guys for this program. Our family's a very big supporter of the Cincinnati Nature Center. Our children attend Mr. Creasy's camps and just rave about them. Thank you so much for educating us. I was not aware that we could do something at sort of the ground level.
That's great.
And we will be definitely planting some milkweed. So just wanted to thank you guys.
You're welcome.
Super.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy.
Take care.
We really appreciate the phone call. Let's talk to Don from Oxford. Good afternoon, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I had a question, and then I'd like to relate a story about monarch butterflies that I think you might find, guests might find interesting.
Let me do the question, and we've only got about 30 seconds, Don. I apologize.
Right.
So as quickly as you can.
That's fine. The question is, what species of the milkweed are in the packets? Are they the native milkweed that we have around here?
Yes, they're all native.
They're all native.
They're all native. We have the common milkweed, the butterfly milkweed, and the swamp milkweed. So three species mixed in.
Okay.
Good. And it's the butterfly milkweed that I had planted on the edges of my goldenrod fields so that I could get the nectar and the host plant in relatively close proximity.
Great.
Great, Bill, and unfortunately we've run out of time, but thank you for the question. We do appreciate it. Or Don, I should say. And Bill, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Glad to be here.
Bill Hoppel is Executive Director of the Cincinnati Nature Center, and Bill Creasy, Chief Naturalist and Adult Program Manager with the center. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The Cincinnati Edition theme music was composed by William White. The producer for today's program was Jim Nolan. The technical director was Kevin Rawinski. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Science Friday next on 91.7 WVXU.
We all know the environmental and aesthetic importance of trees, but the right tree in the proper setting can also define a landscape and add significantly to a home's value. On the next Cincinnati Edition, our horticulturists are here to offer advice on choosing the right trees for your yard and how to care for them. And in Focus on Technology, for some kids, forming letters with their tongues is not as easy as it sounds, but a new speech therapy is showing promise. That's Cincinnati Edition, Monday afternoon at 1 o'clock on 91.7 WVXU.